I know it's infuriating, but closing thoughts.
Oh, I'm not done yet. Sorry.
Howdy, folks. This is Hedgepod, a podcast about how our mass media reinforces the cultural hegemony of the ruling class. I'm Jack. My pronouns are they and them. I'm also okay with he, him.
I'm Nova. My pronouns are he and him.
I'm Athena. My pronouns are she, they.
And what we do here is explain and explore the many ways that popular media is used to consciously and unconsciously enforce the ideology of the ruling class. Cultural hegemony is a component of Marxist philosophy. We're leftists here, which means we have radical takes, like robotically repeating a pledge to a national symbol is not a form of individual expression or the ultimate form of freedom.
And if you're literally humping the flag, you just might be a nationalist.
Mm-hmm. So, we got that take, because we're kicking off our, what is probably going to be...
We got a banger! Oh, man, this is...
It is a banger.
Oh, boy.
This is probably going to be the start, the premiere of what will be our eternal season. We started doing we did a lot of specials in between while we were on the breaks, had a lot of time to go do some soul searching and really do some deep reflection to get into what where we wanted to take the show, what the direction was going forward. So I think that what we've done now is, what we've decided is that we're going to kind of shy away from doing block content per season. And instead, we're just going to kind of go with what we think is going to be a good topic or something that everyone's excited about talking about. Or in this case, something that no one is excited about talking about, but we're also...
Oh, I'm excited about it. It has provoked an emotional
it's
reaction.
It's so bad, my brain just wants to block it off. Like, it is to the point... Like, there, when something gets this bad, I don't care anymore. I just want to say, it's bad, just toss it, start from the beginning, just cut it down.
Yeah, content warning, we're going to be talking about some extreme indoctrination of children. We're probably going to get into aspects of slavery, probably talk about violence, probably
parental
talk
abuse.
About abuse, all kinds
so
of things.
Racism.
Yeah. So just be aware of all of that before we continue. I usually patch the content warnings in after the show, but after seeing this one, I knew that it was going to be something that was going to
also
send
transphobia.
All of us. Yeah, transphobia too.
Because you gotta have that.
Yeah, that was right. Just gotta throw it in there. So, what are we watching today, Athena? Would you like to get us caught?
No,
up
I don't. So today is Girl Meets World. Specifically, the episode of Girl Meets Communism.
Communism.
Yeah, whatever type of communism that I don't know what type of communism that they're talking about, because it's not one I'm familiar with.
So what I thought was interesting, I was really exhausted whenever we went to watch the show, and we'd been watching them in advance, so I didn't take any notes, and I kind of talked to Nova and Athena. I was like, are y'all cool with me just watching this and, you know, doing what I can? So here's what I'm going to do. I watched it earlier, hated it every second of it. I'm going to be pulling up someone else's notes for the first time. I'm probably just going to pull both of yours up in another tab and then just sort of see how much of it was in line with what my thoughts were. So let's get right into it.
All right. So a lot of people, especially ourselves and our older listeners, will remember the sitcom Boy Meets World. Where, you know, you've got this precocious kid and this, you know, wise school teacher, Mr. Feeney, and this kind of like Crystal Wu girlfriend, Topanga. And I knew that it existed, but I didn't watch that much of it. And the main reason I didn't watch that much of it is because in the late 90s, I wasn't watching a lot of anything on TV. Because my religious parents had shut off all broadcast television because it was a way by which the devil could get his temptations to our sweet, innocent ears. So,
right.
Well, I mean, maybe they're onto something after watching this.
Yeah. And, you know, they did me a favor because I didn't see stuff like this growing up. So.
Well, to round out the rest of the context, this show is a spinoff show of Boy Meets World, and the main character is... Corey Matthews, the lead character in Boy Meets World's daughter. right?
Riley Matthews. And,
yeah, Riley Matthews. So, spoilers for Boy Meets
World. Yeah, spoilers for Boy Meets World. Corey marries Topanga. So, any will she won't be she that you see over the course of the series is all completely invalidated because you can see Girl Meets World and go, oh, okay, they got married and had two kids.
Yeah.
And right. Topanga sold out.
She sold out pretty hard, too. Like, she went full corpo.
Yeah.
Riley is in school, and strangely, her dad, and this happens sometimes, so, you know,
usually in small towns.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's, like, in a big school. I mean, like, the what is it, John Quincy Adams.
I know, because I had to look it up, because I was like, wait, is that a founding father? Oh, no, it's the son of the founding father. Now, okay, so this is part of, this is my in front of the tack board moment here. John Quincy Adams was the son of John Adams, who I think was our third president, and he was not himself a founding father, but his dad was. And he got all of these positions, like ambassador positions and, you know, in charge of this or that, and ultimately got the president. Now, did he do that on his own, out of his own accomplishments, or was it because his dad was one of the... His father was a literal founding father. Yeah. Now...
Well, what do you think?
The show, Girl Meets World, its showrunner is Michael Jacobs. He was also the showrunner for Dinosaurs and for Boy Meets World, and I think Charles in Charge. And this episode of that show is written by his son, chiefly, who his wife made him hire as, according to him, his wife made him hire his son as a writer on the show. Wow. So much like it's a similarity there with, you know, the name of the school being John Quincy Adams School. It's, you know, someone who got to a position of importance through nepotism and who their father was. And that's also who, you know, the writer of some of these episodes was.
And that so, says a lot, because it's a poorly written show. And I like me some goofy, heartwarming, cheesy sitcoms, but this is, it's not good.
The John Quincy Adams Honor Board stands in session.
Case number 42. Isaiah Babineau stands accused of boosting somebody's lunch.
Prove it.
So we start the scene. The scene opens and it's Riley and the middle school. They're talking about, they're doing some weird ass trial thing.
Yeah, see, the white successful kids get to hold a tribunal where they will then judge the classmates that they find in superior, like any, you know, minority classmates they have who that they can, you know, finger for stealing food.
The very first scene, straight up, cold opens, black kid in the middle of the room and like six white kids at a panel, and I think there's an Asian kid. And
he's the bailiff. He's not one of the judges.
And they're literally judging this kid, like pointing, literally finger wagging and saying, like, you stole food, you Robin Hooded, you. His rebuttal was like, well, I like, it was like everybody got peanut butter and jelly, but I like the what is,
well,
the
meatball, no, some sub of the kids have PB&J that they bring from home, and other kids have like meatball subs, and he switches them.
Right, so his whole idea was that he was Robin Hooding the kids' lunches.
I actually thought really that this was Robin a good Hood thing. Is,
but,
like, know, that, I and, sorry, go ahead.
And the thing is, like, they're trying to, you know, set it up like his Robin Hooding is just switching around the different sandwiches, but, you know, the actual Robin Hood character would have been going to one person who has a gigantic pile of 20 sandwiches, 19 of which are going to go bad before they can ever eat them, and then go and distribute those sandwiches out to people who have no sandwiches and who are in danger of starving.
Right.
Like, so that's what Robin Hood was doing. He wasn't just like swapping one bag of money with another bag of money or something.
A smaller bag of money.
I agree, but it should be noted that it is still kind of a rich and poor thing, because like the PB&J sandwich absolutely. Would be, you know, that's more of a staple of lower income people, where meatball, like meat in general, especially a meatball sub, like that's pretty high end, even if
for sure.
And then you're gonna just have it for a kid's lunch. That's that's ritzy.
Unrelated or maybe related, I always make my kids eat peanut butter and jelly if they won't try the school's lunch. Like, my daughter is really picky, and they don't always have great options, but like if she's like, she always has the option to be like, I don't want the school lunch that they're providing. I'm like, that's fine, I'll make you peanut butter jelly. So that's just like a weird thing that we have in our family, but I totally do get what you're saying. Like, I think that that could have been that. Well, that was literally the point that they were trying to make, right? Because he actually said, like, I'm doing a Robin Hood, like I'm taking the meatball sub and trading it with another kid because they should have something better. Again, this whole bit unfolded in about 14 seconds. So
yeah.
It was like...
remember, too, and again, also, cultural hegemony, reason we're all here, the kid who steals the sandwiches and who's, you know, unrepentant about this and is seemingly misunderstanding what's going on, you know, the black kid who's doing all this was written that way.
Mm-hmm.
He was directed to act that way. So they're presenting it like this is the reality of somebody who's doing this, but it is their skewed, you know, the showrunner's skewed version of reality. And as I think we're going to make pretty clear in discussing the episode here, they have no idea what reality is.
Yeah, it's really bizarre, too, that they chose to enter the show, to start the show on such a brazen note of white supremacist hegemony. Like, straight up. Like, white kids judging black kid for stealing. Like, that was what they decided to that was the foot that they started off on.
The
you know, so it was
year
like,
after Ferguson, by the way.
This was
2014. This aired.
Right.
Like,
yeah, so you think there's a little coincidence there, maybe?
Well, I think what happened... Now, mind you, I didn't... this is the only... Well, I've watched the first episode a while back, but... So, normally these type of shows has the quote-unquote dumb kid, right? In the class that's like, oh, well, that's so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's what this kid is. However, yeah, I think it really shows that you did not hire any, like, sensitivity consultants or whatnot. The fact that you've gotten this far and... the black kid is your dumb kid is
the
bad.
The one black kid in the entire school.
Oh, I didn't notice that. Oh, shit. Yep, that's worse. Oh, dear God, guys.
Oh, wait, no, there's one other one who's a background character, and by background character, I mean he literally is just in the very background of the classroom in the shots.
Oh, God, it's so bad.
it's so awful. Again, this is the point. This point happened... I mean, it seriously was like 14 seconds of the first show. I got into like 3 minutes of this show and already had so many thoughts. I was like, oh, this is going to be a straight zinger. Like, they start off, black kid is the criminal. They have a panel of white kids who, like, I don't know, did we see the selection committee for this in previous
mm-hmm.
episodes? How did they get this power? Like, maybe some context is required in here, but let's be honest, I don't think we're going to get
I mean, the teacher
anything.
That, Corey, who is overseeing it, is the dad to one of the people on the panel.
Right. It's
that
such
makes
a,
it a real again, mystery how she wound up on the panel.
It's such a brazen. I can't. It's so quickly just goes. It hits the whole gamut. You know, white supremacy, nepotism. You know, like
class
disparities. Yeah, class disparity. It's using
school to like reinforce corporate bullshit and.
Yeah.
The justice system that is skewed
right.
and racist and shit.
Right. So right out the gate, we start off on that foot. And it's like,
worse.
And it gets worse. It gets worse from here somehow. I mean, it honestly, I watched this, I was just, I mean, it shows like, what, runtime, 23 minutes, something like that.
It
and
felt
I was
like an hour.
Flabbergasted. Mm-hmm. It felt like it forever. And I even rewound it to catch the intro too, just to like see if I could get any weird like Easter eggs or something. But it turns out I think it was just like a super lame intro that was just vapid. Like,
I've been waiting for a day like this to come, struck like lightning. My heart's beating like a drum on the edge of something wonderful.
I didn't see any art in it.
It took me 3 hours to get through this.
Yeah. Yeah.
It took me the runtime of the show and one rewind. I wasn't going to flagellate myself about rewatching it any more than I had to.
Oh, it was because, like, I didn't rewatch it. I paused. And then my partner kept laughing at me because, you know, I would click unpause and then go pause again and sigh and then clack, 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 clack on my keyboard, unpause, and then sigh, pause, clack, 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 clack.
So they get through and they start talking about, they talk about justice and they start talking about sentencing and stuff, because they bring one of Riley's friends up to the tribunal.
Maya and
Frankel?
Yeah.
Crackle? It doesn't matter.
Farkle,
crackle, snap.
Snap. Fuck Kellogg, though.
Snap, crackle, pop, farkle. I don't know what the hell his name is. Whatever his name is, it could not matter less.
Nope.
But they get brought up because one of the kid Maya, who's just like Riley's friend, cheated from Farkle, who's supposed to be the smart kid, I guess, in the class, and he's like a legacy
smart
character
and
too,
an
right?
Incel.
Like,
Farkle, how could you rat out Maya for cheating off of you?
I didn't rat her out. Maya can do whatever she wants with me.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. And so they bring it up and they start talking about justice, and Corey, the teacher, is popping in and saying, like, he's trying to interject, like, do you think this is the right way? Like, they're trying to justify, you know, what constitutes crime, what's worthy of punishment, what should they do to...
Yeah, and what they get into is that the... because Riley is trying to find a reason to not have to get her friend in trouble, basically. And...
Mm-hmm.
I learn better this way, Mr. Matthews. When I see the answers Farkle chooses, it helps me circle the right thing.
You can't just steal his answers, Maya.
Why not? I'm finally learning what you've been trying to teach me. You've tried everything, and I'm really grateful, but I found a way.
But the approach that she comes at it from is actually a pretty smart one, where she's talking about how, you know, the way that they learn in the classroom isn't the way that Maya learns, and that, you know, a new approach to learning, a new way of tackling it might be beneficial for her. And this is presented as the dumbest and stupidest thing anybody's ever said.
It is. It really is.
They're so wild.
Corey jumps in and is immediately like, how do you ever think that would work? Or something along those lines. The tone of it, too, and I wish I was joking, the tone that Corey has toward his own daughter character this entire episode just reeks of, like, you dumb bitch.
Yeah.
It sounds like he's just thinking, you know, how dare you try to challenge me? Yeah. Yeah. It's so gross, and it's like one of those things where you've been around abusive parents and you know what their behavior patterns are when you see how they treat children. And this episode was just like bang, 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 bang. Every scene, every time Corey Matthews opened his mouth,
it's just another red flag.
Yeah, red flag. It was another form of subtle, sometimes not so subtle, most of the time very subtle abuse to Riley. After they do this, they do this whole thing where she says, like, I just want my friends to, you know, get off easy, and, you know, maybe we need to look at it a different way, you know. And of course she's saying it because she doesn't want to be the one in charge of punishing their friend. Who would want to do that? Like,
that's what in actual legal professions we call conflict of interest. You would never put You wouldn't have.
Well, you're not supposed to.
You're not supposed to.
It happens in Oklahoma all the goddamn fucking time. Fuck you, Kelby.
Yeah. Yep. It does. It happens all over the country, and, but yeah, and you're it happens not supposed all over the world. But yeah, you're not supposed to. So this ideology is immediately presented. Like, they gloss over that part completely. Well, they totally gloss over the fact that Riley is, you know, a direct conflict of interest and should not be. She should recuse herself of this trial.
But they don't even she's a kid. She might not even know it's an option. It's not. They're certainly not going to present it to her.
I think something that's interesting is one of the things that says is, like, you can't compromise your values just because they're your friends. And she says, watch me. And honestly, I think this is interesting because actually that is what is taught to everybody. Nepotism and, you know, having all, like, oh, you need to go to the career fairs and have connections and all this stuff. So you, quote unquote, rise above the crowd with your resumes and stuff. It's like, that's what, it's the same shit.
Yep.
You're trying to have this familial connection with someone so they will give you special treatment. Yep. Our entire system is built upon this.
Yeah.
Well, and I guess to present a totally opposite take on that, but still support, I think, our whole point is that, you know, Riley cares about Maya and doesn't want to be in a position of having to throw the book at her. Like, that's a big challenge to, like, even if she knows she's supposed to or whatever, like, they're friends. Like, if you knew your friend did something that was against the law, like, would you snitch on them? Like, probably not. Like, I mean, it's hopefully one of those not. Things, like, well, I mean, it depends on what it is, obviously, and what the ramifications are, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But in this case, it's just sort of like a very simple, like, she's just basically, I don't want to do this. And then again, Corey is like, you dumb bitch. You have to do this, you know? Like of course you do. And you're stupid for thinking that there is even another remotely possible way.
Yeah, and, like, and then he goes on to say, it's like, wrong is wrong. She didn't learn anything. Which is interesting to me, because it's like, you're the teacher. That's your fault.
Yeah, like the test isn't learning. The learning is the process up to the test. So if she doesn't know the answers for it, then she must not have been taught.
Yeah, and, like, the entire thing is set up, like, and honestly, I think Boy Meets World had an issue with this, too, where it's this whole entire framework of, like, the troublemaker kid, they're stupid, they don't learn anything, they can't learn anything, because, you know, they're so lazy, they just don't care. Yeah. It's their fault. It's no one else's fault, it's set for that kid. And it's fucked up, because there are people who legitimately think, who go into teaching thinking, it's me versus the children.
Mm. And it sets the tone, too, for what we're going to get into a little bit later in the show, this idea that everybody's on their own, and there is no support system for you at all, and every decision that you make has to be your own decision on an island. That's the moral of the episode from the writer's standpoint. Like, American individualism is the point that they're trying to make, and they're trying to say
every person's an island unto themselves.
Yes, exactly, and not only that's just the way that it is, but that's the way that it should be.
Fuck
like
that.
Like, there's some sort of noble, like you know, some sort of divine, you know, God-given right that you have this freedom of expression, but also freedom to be by yourself in every decision that you make, even when it constitutes, like, throwing your best friend under the bus.
Or, you like, know, mental health, having friends, feeling isolated and depressed.
Yeah, like, you're on your own. You're on your own. And that's the freedom that we have here
and
in this country.
It totally makes sense evolutionary, because we totally evolved as singular individuals and totally not as a community-based or, like, creature.
Oh, yeah. I mean, who can forget the Kropotkin book, Individualism, a Factor of Evolution?
Right.
You know, so, the apes in real life that are all, you know, just going about and fighting each other all the time for, you know, by themselves?
So when they make the decision that Maya is, Riley's like, I'm just going to let her go, you know, and then Corey's like, oh, I'm so disappointed in you.
I want so desperately to be proud of you.
I want to be proud of you.
Yeah, Yeah, he says, I want to be proud. I want to be proud of you so bad, and that's why it hurts me, because I wish I could be proud of you, sort of.
Yeah, you they have go home, to agree with what I want you to, you know, believe and think how I want you to think, or otherwise I'm not going to be proud of you, and you're not going to have value to me as my child.
Y'all, yeah. I'm not going to lie. Like, this gives me bad flashbacks to my childhood. Yeah. It's like, oh my god, Corey Matthews grew up to be my fucking father.
And then Topanga, the mother, is like, what's the matter? Rough day today? Or something like that? Or having trouble getting through? Or something like that? And he's like, look at what I have to work with.
Well, that's, you know, later, like, on.
Yeah.
Because, like, it first starts with, because it's like she's sitting at the table in black and white, or red and black, by the way, which are anarchist colors. And
anarcho-communist, anyway.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And
a beret.
A beret, and John Lennon pinned to her chest, which it took me and my partner a good bit trying to figure out what, and I was like, oh, it's because she's getting him mixed up with Lennon.
Vladimir Lennon. And she tries to quote the song.
I am the walrus.
And they I think she, well... Is it I'm the Walrus? She's trying to quote Imagine, right?
I don't know. Like, I was making a joke about when they tried to reference Lennon and Lennon in Big Lebowski.
Oh, right. Either way, it was like super cringe, and it was just uncomfortable to watch, and I just, like, was not vibing on it at all. They were forcing it so hard. Like, she was, like, you know, trying to take one of the most trite, it, like, a low-hanging fruit unity messages from Imagine. It was like misquoting it, thus, you know, further doing the thing that, you know, boomers love, like, and I say I mentioned this earlier, I was like, this is why Gen X and boomers always get, like, lumped in together. Because Corey Matthews is very much not a boomer, but, like, this is some boomer brain mentality stuff right here, what they're doing to the kid. Because, like, she misquotes John Lennon song, right? Like, she's a kid. She's probably heard the song once, maybe. Yeah. And she tries to quote it just to say, like, hey, I'm trying to share something that I learned. And they immediately make fun of her for it. Like, they're just like, you misquoted it, you got it wrong. Like, it's veiled, and they don't actually come at it, like...
We skipped a scene.
With those words. Oh, did we? Yeah. Oh, well, it was the B-plot.
No, because after the tribunal, it goes to the classroom and communism's written on the board, and then after that it goes to lunch.
Oh, God.
Or dinner.
Okay. All right, well, let's back the truck up a little bit. You want to bring us up to speed on the... Because I'm afraid I won't have the energy to do it, to be honest.
Okay, so before that, like, because it's like, well, where does the communism come into play? How do you go from cheating to this? Well... It goes to the classroom later, and Corey is a history teacher, and he has to be one of the worst history teachers on the face of the earth because he doesn't know any. But anyway, so on the board is written in huge letters, communism. And they start talking about communism and, you know, spouting really dumbass cliches. Like, there's no individualism under communism. Let me find the quote here real fast.
It's like one of the kids says something like, oh, so communism is when everybody's the same. And then another kid's like, bingo.
Yeah,
or something. Corey's like, oh, that's exactly right.
Yeah, that's communism, that's exactly but right. It's more complicated than that, which I have, I'm like, oh, hope?
Wait, so you're telling me that in communism, everybody shares with everybody else?
Yes, Riley, the communist philosophy is that everybody's the same and everybody gets the same thing.
So you mean when somebody doesn't know something on a test and somebody does, you're supposed to share that information?
Yeah, that's communism. But it's a little more complicated than that. You know the American dream?
Yeah.
Well, this is the other thing.
You know the American dream? And then my hope is immediately dashed, and it's like, this is the other thing. Pointing to communism. Communism is the other thing to the American dream.
I mean, sort of, but, you know, not in any way that presents the American dream in a positive light.
Right. He points to Riley and is like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Because it's like, it doesn't matter. I see you as a factory worker. And Maya says, like, oh, I want to be a factory worker. And he says, no, I see you as a potato farmer. And she's like, but I prefer the warmth of the factory.
What do you all want to be when you grow up?
I haven't decided yet.
I see you as a factory worker.
Well, what if I don't want to?
I want to be a factory worker.
I see you as a potato farmer.
But I prefer the warmth of the factory.
And he's like, it doesn't matter. Because under communism, you get to do nothing you want to do.
Which is absolute bullshit. Like, the Soviets wouldn't have said, hey, this person wants to work in a factory. Let's put her on the potato farm. They'd want to have people working. They loved having people working in factories, and they would want to have people working there who wanted to be there.
That's the same argument that I've always heard ever since I was a kid. And because I did the same, like, I read the Communist Manifesto when I was, like, really young. It was one of those things where I got in this edgy phase where I was, like, I read Mein Kampf and I read the Communist Manifesto. But it's because it was, like, shit that people didn't talk about in school. So I was like, well, I'm going to go read it, I guess. And, yeah, I read the Communist Manifesto. I was like, there's, like, pretty good stuff in this. And then I went and, like, talked to my dad about it, and he was like, oh, so you just want the government to decide what you do for work? And I was like, I didn't really get that out of this, but no. And that was just kind of the end of the conversation. You know, and I feel that same logic is, like, seeping through into this lesson in this episode here. They're just trying to say, well, like,
one of the next thing he says is, your individual goals don't matter. There are no social classes. No one is more or less successful than anybody else. And he's trying to frame that like it's a bad thing?
Right. Right.
There are no social classes. Don't you hate that? Isn't that one of the things you guys always like to talk about with the Founding Fathers and overthrowing tyranny and all that shit?
Yeah, it's like, wouldn't you hate it if we got rid of this caste system where half of our population is actual, like, sold into chattel slavery? Like,
you know, that thing that we criticize other countries for doing?
Right.
And
yeah,
and while he's talking to them about this too, the boy, for some reason, probably because he's an Unsoul, says that he wants to take over the world, and Corey Matthews says,
can I still take over the world?
You sure can, just as long as everybody can take over the world with you.
Oh, you can take over the world, but everybody else has to take it over with you. And
it's just like, what is the logic?
That's amazing. Just amazing. Because, one, the right wing loves to present communism as a dictatorship. And they will present democratic countries that have elected a socialist president as a dictatorship.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care if it's actually a dictatorship or not. They just love throwing it out there. If it's a communist country, it's a dictatorship. Whoever's in charge, whoever's like the premier of the party, Congress or whatever, at any given time is considered a dictator. So, like, Brezhnev was a dictator, or Khrushchev was a dictator, and, like, for some of them, yeah, maybe sometimes, but a lot of the times it's just a word that they use for, you know, whoever's in charge of a place we don't like, and for some reason we don't really care that there's still a fucking king in Saudi Arabia, because we like the oil. Right.
Or a queen in England.
Yeah. But,
I mean,
so what Corey's saying here is he's saying all those complaints about a dictator are bullshit. There are no dictators in communist countries. There is only the dictatorship of the proletariat.
If there was a single, like, cohesive thread of logic that you could follow throughout all this, you might accidentally mistake some of the things that Corey says as based.
Mm-hmm.
But when you realize that he's saying them as pejoratives, and that they're all things that we should be ashamed of.
Oh, wait, he thinks this is bad.
It's so exactly. Wild. Because it's like,
right.
the kid, Maya, who cheated, she for some reason learns through cheating. Like, it is demonstrated that she is getting smarter by doing that. And we're supposed to be like, oh yeah, she should totally go back to the method that wasn't helping her beforehand. Like, what the hell?
And
schools aren't for learning. Schools are for imposing an ideology on a young people.
Yep.
I mean, that's it, like the stuff that they want them to memorize, like, you know, where was the Transcontinental Railroad finished? Like, who does that make a difference to your life now? Probably not. Is it like humanities? Probably not. It, you know, it's garbage standardized testing where they're just pounding stuff into students by rote to prepare them for the standardized test so that they can then do a brain dump and regurgitate it. And then what you're going to do is you're going to forget all of that shit because then you've got the next test coming up that you have to study. You know, there's so many better ways to teach kids, especially, you know, high schoolers, than what this idiot's doing. And, you know, good credit on Maya for trying to find, she's like, I mean, the only options she had were looking over the guy's shoulder or the teaching method that's not working for her. Now, if you went and said, okay, well, you know, why don't we try and do this cooperative learning method? And you had, you know, split the class up into teams and had those teams go and research things, then one, that's something that happens in, you know, college fairly often. And two, you may actually learn something because you're getting more involved in the material than just, you know, sitting there and have somebody talk at you.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, and because I was thinking about going into teaching. I'm not now for obvious reasons, but like one of the things they kept talking about, it's like we can't actually say the point, which is the way that we're doing everything is shit. It is so goddamn bad. You need to do a variety of things because people don't learn the best by just having someone spout a wall at you. Like, it's like a verbal wall of text constantly. Like, people, even if you're not neurodivergent, like, you're going to not be able to process all of that all the time. You need to be involved.
Right. And it's funny, too, that they, you know, every attempt that they have to sort of challenge what Corey has presented here, or, you know, whatever the prevailing ideology is. And let's make no mistake, what's being taught here is not history at all.
No.
Like, there's no, like, this happened in this at this time, and then this happened, which resulted in this. It's none of that. It's just straight up ideological, you know, brainwashing, I guess is the word. I mean, but anyway, every attempt that they have to sort of look into it a little bit more or like investigate is met with a no. Mm-hmm. There's no point. There's no reason for you to do that. Trying to even investigate what I'm saying any further just means that you're stupid and that I'm not proud of you and that you're not learning anything and that you know you're supporting bad enemy ideology. Like, the show could not be more clear that is an okay way for a teacher and parent to behave to their children or to someone that is in a learning situation.
Yeah, and to kind of like move on a little bit, but to add on to that, what leads to her going like, oh, I'm a communist now, is she sits there and she thinks about it, and she's like, because the whole thing is like, well, maybe we should be able to share our test answers and whatnot. Like, maybe we should be able to help each other learn if it helps. And some of the things she says, it's like, why do we need to be in competition with each other? Why do we need to be motivated by report cards, which is really based? But I guess it's supposed to be like, oh, look at this silly child, how dumb she is.
Yeah.
But, like, she says that, and it's 2016, so I don't think Trump has humped the flag yet, but Corey Matthews hugs the fucking flag randomly throughout the thing multiple times. Like, so after she spouts Riley spouts all of these things, Corey runs to the flag and then, like, holds it up and it was like,
hugs it.
Yeah, cheerfully and hugs. Says, think carefully about what you say next. And then the kids spout, like, comrade, from each according to their needs, from each according to their abilities, and then they hug, and that's supposed to be a bad thing, you know, that phrase, which is very good.
Good, yeah. So, I have an interesting bit of trivia about the whole flag humping thing. So, this is just something that crossed my mind. I didn't look this up or anything, but the guy that plays the dad in Boy Meets World, the guy that plays Corey Matthews' dad, I can't think of the guy's name, the actor's name. Anyway, he would have been Riley's grandpa. The actor played in another well-known movie about white supremacy and racism called American History X. I don't know if y'all have ever seen it or not. But he plays the dad in that show who is a racist white supremacist, like a self-admitted white supremacist that's like a literal Nazi. So that's kind of funny that you have Ben Savage here playing Corey Matthews, hugging the flag, preaching nationalism to a middle school class, one of which his daughter is in, and the actor that plays Corey Matthews' dad is the racist dad in American History X.
He's propagating his trauma from his childhood into the next generation. He's got to break the cycle of abuse here at some point.
Through the multiverse. He's doing it through the multiverse because I don't know if Corey Matthews' dad, the character, was also a racist, white supremacist guy, but the actor at least played one in another movie. So, but yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. Like he's passing on, you know, presumably this is the stuff that his mom and dad taught him, you know, like growing up, and you know, they're kind of boomer age.
If I remember, his friend was a very poor white kid. His name is Hunter.
Hunter. Yeah. Sean Hunter.
Wow. Thanks, brain. Pulled that out of the deep crevices. But
it's amazing.
Anyway, and they were really mean to him a lot.
They were
like, yes. Corey, you need to stop hanging around with this white trash, basically. And it's like, fucking hell. Maybe you guys should be very sympathetic that this kid needs a good place.
Right.
Like,
yeah, it's kind of weird that he never moved in with Corey. Like, there was a whole period where he was, like, homeless for a while, or like, the teacher ended up taking him in and stuff, and it was kind of like, Corey was always just like, yeah, that poor Sean, you know.
You'd think that would be a radicalizing experience, but,
you know. You'd think it would be, but apparently not. He just went to flag hugging, so. So it's kind of funny because in Boy Meets World, one of the things, the thing that happens to his older brother's character when he gets Flanderized or whatever later on, or he just becomes really, really stupid for some reason. Like they make the older brother, what's his name? Eric?
Yeah, it was Eric.
Eric. They make him in the college years, they make him like super, super dumb. And I feel like that's what they did to Corey in this series.
Yeah.
Like they went full Eric on Corey. So maybe something happens. I don't know. Did the Matthews family residence have lead in the water or something? They were just like drinking it, and after they reach a certain age, they just lose all capacity to make a rational.
I mean, going off of time frames, he probably went off the rails about the time Obama got elected, and then that was when he was like, "Oh, time for me to join that text enough already party."
Yeah, that sounds
about right. The timelines would work out. The timelines match up there.
Topanga did the exact same thing, too. They took her from being, like, a flower child sort of thing to some corpo lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I mean,
she's like girl boss.
It could be okay if she's, like, a defense lawyer that helps, like, downtrodden people who are getting fucked over by the system. But I have a strange feeling that that's not the case.
So, I know we're kind of going out of order, but they do bring Topanga in to defend the case for communism or what have you, right? Like, they're like,
I'm not even sure what the actual case is that they're trying to make there, that, like, the girl
Riley
learned through cheating or something. Like, it's not even intended as a criticism
really
of communism, I think. Not that part of it.
It's hard to follow, to be honest, because of how poor.
Yeah, you guys are right. They do not mention, like, because it's like it is admitted she cheated, so therefore there isn't anything to find out. So
I
don't know
they basically went in and said, like, okay, we're commies now, and that was about the time that Corey was getting upset with her for like being dumb. And then they're going to have a case to, like, say which is better or something. That was the take. That was my takeaway, that they were like, we're going to prove to you that communism is the better system. And
And, but they don't really say that, though. They're like, we're going to do communists because we're going to share our answers.
Why do they have Topanga come in at all? Because he's we would need a lawyer. Because
she's the director, she wanted scream time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably really it. Because it's like, what does she say? Because it's something like, I'm going to really need some defense here to help me out with this case. But what is there to be helped? Because it has been admitted, you have cheated. So maybe it is something like that. It's better to cheat because she learned. Maybe that was the... But then that means that the end message doesn't make any goddamn sense either. Because that wasn't the message then. Okay, I'm losing it.
We're spiraling.
What is happening?
It's probably a good idea for us to kind of go but this is exactly what my mind was doing.
Yeah, we can't go through it bit by bit.
I can't even follow this. Yeah, it's I mentioned it earlier. I was like, the show is basically a Gish Gallop. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a Gish Gallop of bad take. As soon as you start to try to break down what they're trying to say with one, you're hit with 10 other
mm-hmm.
worse takes than the first one that you're trying to.
It's a shotgun of bad takes.
Yeah, yeah, and so you can't even, and it's a tactic, and I think that they actually did that tactic by writing it in. They were like, we're just gonna gout an absolute barrage of awful. I mean, of course, they didn't think it was awful. We're just gonna shoot patriotism at the screen.
I mean, it's a classic right wing tactic. If you, they talk about it on Innuendo Studios, the guide to the alt-right or whatever mm-hmm. that they did. Mm-hmm. Never no defense is what it is. It's like you're mm-hmm. always attacking and attacking and attacking. So by the time that you cover five takes, they're 20 takes down the road. So you can't ever catch up.
So by that logic, you know, we'd be here all night going through each individual stank take that they bring to the table.
Well,
so let's just go.
What about the B plot?
Honestly, if y'all want to cover the B plot, go right ahead, because I'll just sit back and listen. I thought it was such trash, but
I don't even know what the point of it was.
Let me take it. I'm gonna do it, and there's not really anything super interesting in it, so I'm gonna kind of take it as high as I can here. The youngest kid, who I think is in kindergarten, tells Topanga, his mother, that he wants to grow up to be just like her. She's like, well, you know, there's a lot of work to be a lawyer or something. And he's like, okay, I'm going to do it anyway, because that's what you do, and I want to be just like you. And so then when there's a kid in his class who's a bully, who is, of course, large and overweight, because you need to stigmatize those people because they're bad, because they're mm-hmm. large. Right. Anyway, he pushed another kid off of a swing, and so the Topanga's son says that he's going to represent the bully against the teacher and advocate for him or whatever. And it backfires on him. And then he is trying to hide from the bully later on. So he dresses up like a woman with the help of little girls in the class. And the woman that he dresses up like looks exactly like his mother. And so then... He goes home and she sees that he looks just like her, and she's like, oh no, he is turning out just like me. And I think that was the entirety of that subplot there.
Yeah.
With
and it's it's let's throw a little bit of transphobia in the B-plot.
Look how funny it is that he's dressing up like a girl.
Boy dresses like girl. Ha ha ha. It is
what the
weird.
Fuck?
That was it.
That's it. It's not even resolved, what happens with the bully.
Nope.
No. It's
actually, in fact, the bully looks at the kid when he's dressed as a woman and is like, hello, and then that's it.
Yeah.
It doesn't resolve after that. It the screen goes to a transition after that, and it's like, what the fuck? What is happening? What is the point here? What is happening with my life?
could you imagine being on the production staff of this show? You know, you're just a regular, whatever, California lighting rigger person, or somebody does makeup or something like that, or you're, at the table read or whatever, and you get the script to this thing, and you're, going through it, and you start reading this crap, and you're just like, how? I mean, you know, you're probably working on the production, seeing all these people every day that are getting paid possibly millions of dollars to write this schlock, and you're just like, how did they make it? How did they make it to this point? Well, we know how because of the nepotism that we mentioned earlier, right? Like, it's a daddy's show, so they. Work for your dad. That's how
I have a theory that the reason why Riley is in like anarcho-communist colors for a bit is because like some dresser was like, "Fuck your shit, I'm gonna sabotage you."
They snuck it in.
They'd actually gone through with the thing where like everybody, you can take over the role, but everybody else gets to take it over with you. Well, that would mean everybody just takes back their power over their specific part of the world equally, and everybody on the entire planet has the same amount of power over themselves and over each other, which that is non-hierarchical. That is straight up anarcho-communism right there.
Right. And it's ironically actually supports the end goal that they're saying of being an individual person. Like, it's weird. It's just so weird that they're like, before we get onto that, they fast forward.
Yeah, let's get to the classroom. Infamous scene. And
this is the infamous scene. They're in the classroom. They're dressed in three like military uniforms. I don't know if that was supposed to be a callback or reference to USSR or some other regime.
They
or something.
Look like either Soviet scouts or they look like partisans from anarchist Spain during the Spanish Civil War.
Okay. Either way, it's like a very simple green, like brass button and a hats? Army.
Looks like an envelope a bit.
What are those hats, man? Yeah, it looks like an envelope. I was going to say a fry cook hat, but that's probably disrespectful or something to Army. I don't know, man. Whatever those hats
are. Our brains are kind of oozing out of our ears right now, if you're still listening.
Yeah, I it's funny. I went into this. I was like, I'm going to watch this Stone Cold Sober, and I'm going to do the episode Stone Cold Sober, and I'm wishing I hadn't.
I'm hitting the cabinet after this.
So we're three kids in the classroom, military uniforms. They have a red wall around them on four sides. They come in, and Corey is in the classroom. They still are talking about communism.
Oh, and all of the kids... The Riley, Maya, and what's his face are starting to talk the same, and they're starting to their mannerisms are blending in.
Because that's absolutely a thing that happened under communism.
Right? Yeah. Because God knows that there was not any infighting.
They basically became the Borg at this point.
I want to point out that this I'm sure it wasn't intentional, but it's a little ableist. Because there are, I can speak that there are types of masking where you mimic other people to try and fit in. And in a way, without trying, they're saying like, oh, you're a freak if you do this. You're a freak of nature if you copy other people and copy other people's mannerisms. Like,
yeah, so I totally didn't even see that, but I think that you're on something. Like, that's absolutely a thing that happens. Like... I know a lot of people that do mimicking and mask mimicking, and it's sort of like, throw your disabled under the train sort of thing. Look how silly they are that they picked up someone else's mannerisms because they worked with them the same way.
Now, but, of course, it's not like that severe that they're doing.
Of course
but
not.
But it's like, of it's still not. Like it feels bad because it's like, I mean, I'm one of those type of people. And it's not even something I consciously do because it's a survival thing. And it's... It still kind of feels shitty. It's like, well, fuck you, then. Like,
yeah. So Maya had basically turned into Farkle Minkus and was talking exactly like Farkle and, you know, was saying the things that he says and stuff. They're trying to turn in their report on communism. Right? Yep.
And the wall that was put around them, they did not put that wall around themselves, but it was actually built by the... good-looking football player Chad in the class that I guess is supposed to be Riley's love interest.
Thank you! I was like, this guy looks like a Chad!
Yeah. Because he's there, he's on Corey's side, which the thing you would think from the way that teacher daddy presents all of his arguments that he's being set up as the villain of the piece. So they had to bring in the Chad defender of capitalism to make it clear to you that, no, you're actually supposed to agree with both of them. Anyway, so he's the one who put the wall up around the communists.
Okay, what's this?
We are putting up a wall to protect ourselves from them.
Don't you think that's a little extreme?
It's the judgment of the honor board to separate those who cheat.
Share!
We don't want to become like them. We'd rather remain a free society of individuals. Instead of whatever the heck that was.
But isn't the best part of a free society the fact that it allows its people to consider all beliefs?
Yeah, but I want my friends back, Mr. Matthews.
Because
well,
they're afraid of, you know, communist ideas getting out into the capitalist world and, you know, perverting capitalism or something. And it is a...
Yeah, we don't want to become like them, quote unquote.
Yeah,
it's just a wild... And
so...
We'd rather remain a free society of individuals, is what they said.
That's why you need the walls for that. You need the walls so that you can remain free.
Ursula K. Le Guin, the dispossessed. Why do we build walls? Do we build walls to keep ourselves in, or do we build walls to keep people out? You know, it's
that Hadestown song.
Oh, yeah, Hadestown. Why do we build the wall? Nah. I'll put those links in the description, because anybody who's listening to us that hasn't read The Dispossessed by Ursula K. Le Guin needs to do some homework. You do some homework, please. But, yeah, so they're turning in their assignment, and they've made this grand spectacle, and they're talking like each other, and you have this, you know, these three kids that are communists, self-proclaimed communists, talk like speaking in...
Share! Hey! We all said it at the same time! I'm hungry. What is happening to us?
Whoa.
As one cohesive unit, and Corey goes to issue the grades for the tests.
Recent exams. Mr. Fryer, 100%, you get an A. Mr. Babineau, 100%, you get an A. Ms. Hart, Ms. Matthews, Farkle, 100%, you get a C.
What? We get a what's that you say now? How do we get 100% and get a C?
Because when you get everything right, but you don't do it yourselves, it makes you average. A divided by 3 is a C.
And he goes around the class, hands it out, and he says, you get 100%, that's an A. You get 100%, that's an A. And then he goes to them and says, 100%, you get a C. And they're like, what? And he's like, because when you do it together, it's like supposed to be this big,
It's supposed to be the mic drop moment where he's like, it's cheapened because you all did it together, which by his logic means that any group project that you have to do in college should have the
any group project. I would never let him live that down. If he was ever like, okay, put your desk together, working in groups, I'd be like, remember the time back when we talked about communism and you said, no, sir, if you make me go in this group it over cheapens here, we're our all going to get quarter credit. It cheapens our output. I would never let him forget it. I would never let him forget it.
Once again, and I know I've said this, and I know people get weird when you mention ableist a lot, but, like, it's still also ableist, because it's like, there are people who might need a little extra help here and there, and it's like, let's see, what did he say? If you do everything right, but don't do it yourself, it makes you average.
Look at you. You're all the same. You're average. You're common.
Communism. This is why it fell. People didn't want to all be the same.
Yeah,
and it's like, common. Wow, it makes you common. Fuck you.
Yeah, it makes you common. And then he points at the chalkboard and says, communism, communism. And then, like, does this mic drop thing, and then everybody clapped, and Albert Einstein and Abraham Lincoln
everybody
flew
clapped,
off
and then F-14 Riley stood up proudly and put her hand over the heart and started solemnly saying the Pledge of Allegiance, and a tear came to Teacher Daddy's eyes, and he put his hand over the heart, and they started saying the Pledge of Allegiance so that they could...
Oh, and then he says, I'm proud
actually
of
happened.
You.
Riley? I'm proud of you. Mr. Fryer, tear down this wall.
And that actually happened. That actually, that
so,
just
so
happened.
That they can demonstrate like, the superior individualism that you get under democracy and capitalist system. You all have the same right to say the same pledge together at the same time to the same flag.
I have several other points here that I have to get out, because I can tell this was when I was, like, really starting to freak out. So, isn't the best part of a free society is that it allows people to explore all beliefs? You know those times in America, you know, like McCarthyism, that was not a thing, right? Like, we totally allowed people to come to their own conclusions about communism and socialism, and there wasn't any sort of weird government interference or anything with that.
Mm-hmm. Like a committee to determine whether or not you had the wrong ideology. And if you did, you'd be fired and ostracized by the rest of society. You know, very similar to the one they were doing at the beginning of the show. Yeah.
And which is also funny because one of the repeated capitalist strawman critiques of communism is that there'd be a whole bunch of show trials and the legal system wouldn't be legitimate.
It's called, like, there. We have a whole thing about this kind of shit. Like, we have a word for it. For the American version, like, it's just fucking hell.
I know it's infuriating, but closing thoughts.
Oh, I'm not done yet.
I have to. Oh, go.
Sorry. Go for it. Is he points at all three of them and is like, look at you. You're all the same. This is something I've been complaining about lately because it's like, oh, yes, America, the great dream of individualism where you have to be whatever gender you were assigned at birth, or people might fucking murder you, or God forbid you're fucking neurodivergent, because then fuck you, I guess. And you are actually forced to be more, like, it's so fucking weird, because it's like there's this individualism where we all have to, like, do everything ourselves and we're not allowed to help each other, but at the same time we still have to act and look the fucking same. What the fuck is wrong with this country?
America fetishizes the idea of individualism, makes it almost a religion in and of itself, but has always hated the practice of individualism.
That's exactly it. I mean, it's all about talking the talk, but whenever anyone tries to walk the walk, it's, no, we don't do it that way. You know, and it's funny because you see it in every aspect of society. I mean, you've mentioned several occasions that it's ableist. You've mentioned, and I've mentioned, that there's white supremacy. We've talked about it's, you know, anti-intellectual. We've talked about it's anti-challenge. It's anti-investigation. And it's like, if you think about it, you know, for like 2 seconds, capitalism and American individualism are inherently all of those things. They have to be. Like, it's a feature, not a bug. And all of those things that come along with it as nice byproducts are in fact what makes it what it is. I mean, you can't have that level of, you know, patriotism, nationalism, whatever you want to call it, without also engaging in white supremacy and ableism and transphobia and, you know, all these other things. Because if you don't subscribe to the model that is given to you under nationalism, like, then you're left to die. And this show is sort of like, I think I have such a hard time watching it because it comes off as such a benign thing, and the audience it's geared toward children. But the message that's in it, the underlying message, is actually really, really damaging. It's really, really damaging to our society and to, like, the middle generation between us and, like, the Zoomers. You know, the tweener generation or whatever they are. There's, like, kids that are too old to be my kids, but, you know what I mean, too young to be in my same generation. Like, this sort of thing grapples them a lot and shapes their ideology a lot. There are a lot of kids that are, like, you know, 12 to 18 right now when this came out, that probably watched this and, like, took a lot of it to heart. You know, there's probably many kids now that have seen this that are just, like, immediately go to dirty word when they hear the word communism or anything that has to do with Karl Marx or anything that has to do with Vladimir Lenin.
Like, that's how I was growing up, because it's like, oh, communism, that's the thing Hitler did.
It's conditioning, it's attempting to condition its audience to react with derision anytime somebody suggests that communism might be viable. And that is, if you're somebody who's, you know, trying to advocate for communism in personal interactions or online or anything, that's what you run into most often, is when you're like, oh yeah, I'm a communist. People can't believe it. They have to laugh about it. It, you know, throws them for a loop because they've been conditioned to believe it is ridiculous for anybody to support communism. And they've been conditioned to believe that by shows like this.
Yeah, God forbid, and then you tell them that you're an anarchist, then their brain freaking just explodes.
What, like Bane? Right.
I mean, I heard that sort of stuff, you know, from the school, and I heard it from, you know, behind the pulpit, and I heard it from, you know, different textbooks and stuff like that. I heard this sort of stuff. I didn't hear it on the Disney Channel. Well, I didn't have the Disney Channel growing up, but I didn't hear it on Saturday morning cartoons, as far as I know. I mean, you know, this is pretty on-the-nose stuff. Like, it's straight up. We talked about this with the Cheers episode where Cliff Clavin kind of like looked into the camera and was like, communism is bad. That is barely dipping a toe in the water compared to what this show does. I mean, it is, I have to say to our listeners, go and watch it. Like, it's awful.
Don't do it sober.
I don't really wish that pain on anybody. But if you want to check us and to see if we're being hyperbolic, by all means, go check it out and leave us some comments, because I'd love to hear from anybody that can make it through this and be like, I just don't see what the problem is. Actually, I wouldn't love to hear from you. You know what? Forget everything I just said. Don't watch the show. Don't comment.
I think you should watch it. You should especially pay close attention to the opening music and the opening, the like show's version of an anime opening. It's a real work of art, and I say that because art is, you know, commonly defined as something that is created by people that provokes an emotional response in the audience, and this show as such qualifies absolutely as art because it provokes an emotional response in its audience, and right. The opening is part of
this
that.
Is art in the same way that gallery of asshole pictures on the wall.
I mean, y'all, I have 6 pages of notes. Like, we're not going to be able to go through all of it. Like, we could sit here and talk about it for another 4 hours. Like, it's bad.
I've got 5 pages of notes. My soul would leave my barely scratch them.
my soul would leave my body if we did this. And I'm just like kind of grazing through some of these notes, and I wish we could get into it, but I absolutely can't do a 5-hour podcast on this show, man.
I just think it's, I'm not saying we should, I want to point out, like, if it seems like we're rushing, it's because it's like we're trying to get through as much as possible in the limited amount of time. Like, and I just think it's funny, too, because, like, I believe both of our notes, we start out, like, trying to be all calm and nice about it, but by the end, we're just cussing.
Yeah.
And every, like, caps and just, like, fuck. I think I end my notes with fuck this show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe. I've got 2 things to get, quick things to get out before I go. One, this episode of this show comes very close to failing even as cultural hegemony, because cultural hegemony is supposed to reinforce the viewpoints and ideology of the ruling class, and the typical criticisms of the ruling class that are repeated by rote, you know, indoctrinated into every libertarian and conservative asshole out there that they repeat. This episode doesn't touch on those or subverts them and, like, tries to present the opposite of them. Like the dictator thing, like, you know, everybody being the same instead of having an elite class take over just as bad as the one that had been there, that kind of thing. On top of that, they have, I mean, outside of his interactions with the Chad student, the dad is presented, even to a 2016 audience, as an absolute freaking buffoon here, which means even though they're clearly trying to present it in the way that shows communism is negative and capitalism is a positive, they wind up backfiring in doing that by having this, you know, complete loser be the one who's defending capitalism. And when their whole point is individualism and, you know, saying your own things your own way, they cap the episode off with the Pledge of Allegiance that I read some reviews online by people who are, you know, fans of the show, who are watching Girl Meets World all the way through. I don't I can't imagine what kind of mental damage these people have, but they bring up in there that that they didn't like that part of the show. They thought the ending of it was horrible and cheesy. So it undermines its own message at every point. It is trying to be cultural hegemony, but it doesn't have the ability to effectively do that. It is counter propaganda because it's so bad at being propaganda.
Now, also, this episode was supposed to be in season one, apparently. I'm assuming, here's what I think happened, is that there were people that were like, you can't do this. And some bigwig was like, yeah, we can. So it ended up in season two. But what's interesting is there's continuity errors because of it. Because, you know, they're children in middle school. Right. So some of them have had physiological changes at this point. Some of them have haircuts and stuff now. So it's like, season two, it's like it goes through and everyone's changing and whatnot. Then it goes back to season one, and then it goes back to season two right afterwards.
It's so jarring. Wow. They were so desperate to put the propaganda out that they screwed with people's perceptions of the entire series. It's like, oh wait, this is really, really irregular and jarring.
Yeah, it does have an uncanny valley sort of flavor to it, doesn't it? Like, I mean, by the time you get to the end of it, you're just like, what did I just experience? Like, was this, am I still in my living room? Did I eat something?
I had to go on a walk afterward, like, And in the middle of retelling this, I was getting so mad. I was seeing red and everything was tilted a little bit again. It's just...
So...
I mean, I can't imagine that even the staunchest of capitalism would be proud of this. Well, yeah, they probably would.
Yeah.
They might be, though. They get proud of some weird shit.
It's just, this is like being proud of the Ape NFT movie.
And so there's someone who's proud of it. There let's be is. Honest.
Right. And on that
poor,
note,
sad, well, sad individual or individuals.
I've got
tying it back
the perfect ending to all of this. As much as we've complained about the writing for this episode, it was nominated in 2017. This specific episode was nominated for a Writers Guild of America Award for children's script episodes and specials.
Wow.
Fortunately, it didn't win.
I'll be...
But it was nominated.
That is wild.
It was up against Sesame Street, Just Add Magic episode Just Add Mom, and Gortimer Gibbons' Life on Normal Street episode Mel versus The Nightmare of Normal Street.
Okay, so I...
Gortimer Gibbons won, by the way.
If there was any doubt in my mind that these stupid rewards are just who you know, nepotism, who you know and who you buy, this is it. Because it's not good. It's just not good. It's not good. I don't know. Like, and
the reassurance that I have is that it's easy to be nominated. Winning would have me a lot more jaded about this.
I still think that to get nominated, though, there was some money thrown around. But, like... And I just want... I try to be very nice to the media itself because, like, I don't want anyone to feel bad if they like something. We all have, like, weird favorites and stuff that, like, as a whole, like, there are individual parts that aren't great because, of course. But, like, y'all, this episode was not good. It was not well written at all. I cannot emphasize...
It was probably the schlockiest thing I've ever watched. I mean, it's fails truly on every bad. Level.
It's amazing.
I don't normally care a whole lot. Like, I'm a fucking Ruby fan, for the love of God. Like, as long as it makes me feel happy and I get a point or whatnot, like, I don't know. Like, I like a lot of shit that everyone's like, oh, this is poorly written. But, like, so, I feel like if for me to notice something is poorly written, that's bad, y'all. Right. It's not good.
We're gonna have to go and watch a episode of Breaking Bad or something, wash the taste out of my mouth. This one, something decent, you know. This is, I mean, something at least with a coherent plot.
I'm watching Golden Girls right now. But,
Betty White. So I think that's probably about a good place as any to wrap it up. We've got a couple of things that we need to take care of before we sign off here. One of the big ones is Nova has got us started up with a Patreon.
We now
account.
Have a Patreon, so we don't have to sell you mattresses, boner pills, or take sponsorships from Clear Channel.
Yeah, we have pretty low overhead. Just got a couple of but some of our gear is getting a little worn out, and it would be nice to have like some licenses to some editing software and maybe a couple of other little niceties to make things easier on us, save us a little time, because it is quite a bit of work to put these things together. And we do it the commonest way and all work on it together, so it comes out about 30% each, you know, so... we managed to get it done somehow. we'll put a link in the description for the Patreon page. And I've never used Patreon before myself. I follow a lot of people that use it, and so shame on me, I guess, for not having an account and signing up for something. But I'll probably be changing that soon, so we would appreciate your support in advance. And as always, thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing stuff on Twitter, send us ideas in the Discord channel and in our inbox and stuff. So if you got any ideas for a show, hit us up at HedgePod, HEGPOD on Twitter. Again, this season's going to be the one that keeps on rolling. So any idea is on the table at this point. We've got a long slate of stuff that we're going to be working on, and hope y'all are going to be excited about it. I'm excited to record the content, so.
To steal from Drawfee.
Athena Nova?
We're sorry.
What? Yeah. thanks for entertaining the listen here on this one, and a special thanks to Nova and Athena for for putting this all together and taking such detailed notes, because
until we all just start yelling in our notes.
I just did not have
losing
the energy
it
for
more
it, so.
And more the further we go. Just deeper into the heart of darkness. Marlon Brando's out there somewhere. So,
that about does it for us, so we will catch you the next time.
Bye.
Bye.
3 days after Bernie Sanders soundly won the New Hampshire primary in 2016, and almost 2 weeks after he had very nearly tied the Iowa caucuses. It was something like 49.6 to 49.3. Very close. It's a first season episode. We know that for a fact. We know it was on the cutting room floor. Then it was brought back. It was aired late in the second season. Why was this episode aired late in the second season? Why did they screw up the continuity? The children were different ages. Character development was ignored. Why? For what possible reason? They just had to get this thing out. Was it because a certain socialist light Vermont senator had at that point a very real chance of winning the Democratic primary, and therefore a very real chance of becoming president of the United States? That was somebody who had to be stopped at all costs. Is that why they resurrected the episode? I'm just asking questions here. I'm just asking questions!